Good morning, good evening, and hello. The show is going to be a little different than usual. We're talking about a very serious topic today. We're talking about child loss, pregnancy loss, and the process of grieving and life afterwards. And I don't usually give a content warning with our shows, but just because this is such a sensitive topic, I want to warn our viewers that there could be some graphic pictures. This could be a little overwhelming to talk about or to listen to. So come in with an open heart and an open mind, or sit this one out and we'll see you next show. With us today is Lindsay Cornell. She is the founder of Ray of Hope, a support group for bereaved parents. She also has a blog, Living Life, Loss, and Motherhood. You can find that on Facebook. And Lindsay is here to kind of give us her point of view from her experiences and her kind of expert opinion as a doula, as a mother, and as a survivor. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Katie. Katie and I kind of go way back to like roller skating days.
You know, so, I always knew we had a really, really special relationship. I just didn't think our relationship would evolve into something like sharing our grief and supporting each other. But, you know, you take it where you can get it.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think anybody ever really prepares you, or life prepares you, to grieve. And I think that you really, in the grieving process, find support in very unique places. It's not always the place that you think you're going to find it at. That's for sure. At least in my experience anyway. And I feel like a lot of women and couples and partners and stuff, they seem to share the same experience universally on that regard anyways. So
I was just going to say,
go ahead.
So let's start from the beginning to the experiences that kind of put you on this journey.
So I have two older daughters from a first marriage, and then my fiance at the time, we're married now, but we decided that we were going to try to have kids together, and it was a rough road even with our daughter that we have together. We had a lot of trauma there. I had a subchorionic hematoma, so I had a lot of bleeding and a lot of just fear and anxiety, and they kept telling me that we would probably lose her. She only had a 50% chance of survival. Thankfully, we were really incredibly lucky and she made it all the way full term. But so then when we finally decided to try again, I was already going into that pregnancy with a lot of anxiety, you know, from past trauma. And I was really, really worried. And thank God in the beginning, everything was going great. And I went in at 6 weeks and everything was wonderful. And we saw a heartbeat, 120 beats per minute. The baby was actually measuring a couple days ahead. And there was no subchorionic hematoma. So we were like, oh my God, we might actually have a great pregnancy. And we were super stoked and everything was going really good. And I went in, you know, for another checkup at like 10 weeks. They couldn't find the heartbeat, but they told me it was probably too early and not to worry. So I was like, okay. And then I was supposed to go back a couple of weeks later at 12 weeks for just the NT scan. So for people who don't know, that's just like a routine scan that they do at around 12 weeks to test for Down syndrome. If you want to do it, you don't have to do it. But we had opted to do it. And I went in and unfortunately the baby had died. I didn't have any bleeding. I didn't have any warning signs. I thought everything was really fine. And I think that's kind of the misconception of miscarriage. You know, you can go through kind of floating life innocent. And then, you know, so I feel like a lot of people think that a miscarriage is a lot of bleeding or like a really bad period. I think a lot of people think that it's over within a week or so. I think, at least for me, I had this concept in my head that you get over it and you can just try again before it happened to me. And I really never knew how common it was. I kind of thought it was something that happened to people who, you know, had suffered infertility issues or older people. Like I was very blindsided and never saw it coming. And it completely destroyed my life. I felt like somebody had opened a trap door and I fell through. It was really hard in those moments to take in everything that they were talking about and saying to me. It was almost like I was underwater and I couldn't hear everything. I mean, I was there physically, but I couldn't really grasp what they were telling me. And they were trying to explain that the baby had been dead for about a month and was literally decomposing on ultrasound. And I was on the verge of going septic and just a lot of stuff to process and one appointment. And it was really hard. It was hard to go back. So I needed a DNC. 50% of women have a DNC. I would have never known that prior. And the DNC was really hard. I went in. It was weird because at the time I really wanted to get it over with because I really felt disgusted with myself for carrying basically a dead baby for a month and not knowing. I really had a lot of just self-blame. And I think that's another thing that's really common is going through this stage of feeling like you failed as a woman, as a mom, you fail your partner, your baby, you know, you feel like you failed that baby. And you are starting to look for just anything to blame. So that picture that he just pulled up is a little kiddie ride that I had rode with my then 2-year-old that I went through this stage of being convinced that I killed my baby on this ride that really just kind of went around in a circle. And like, it was like a little, like, you know, the rides in the mall that kind of move a little bit. That was really all it was. But I really, really hated myself at that time frame and blamed myself a lot. And I think the realities of a miscarriage are you don't always bleed. I had no warning signs. A baby can just die at any time and you might not ever know. Sometimes it takes days, weeks, months for it to be over. They have to track your HCG back down. Sometimes you have to have surgery like I did. So mine was a missed miscarriage. They call it, my body basically missed the signs. So, you know, if you have an ectopic pregnancy, some women have to have surgeries for that too. There's so many different types of miscarriage. So typically a miscarriage is classified as 20 weeks and under, and a stillborn would be beyond 20 weeks. So that's kind of the classifications as far as in utero loss. And then there's, of course, neonatal death and other things too. But as far as actual pregnancy losses between miscarriage and stillbirth, that's the definition. 20 weeks and under, that's a miscarriage. So different types of miscarriage can be ectopic pregnancy, missed miscarriage, molar pregnancy, chemical pregnancies, blighted ovum. There's so many different forms, and each one brings a very unique sense of loss. Women on a miscarriage end, for me, I like really, really wanted my baby's remains for closure. And I didn't know that by having a DNC, I wouldn't be able to get them. And I had called to the office several times asking if I would be able to bring my baby's remains home, and nobody would answer my question for me. And so then when I got there, I was asking for anxiety medication because I was really having a hard time. I lost 7 pounds overnight from the day I found out to my DNC in the morning. I was so sick overnight that night. I was vomiting continuously. I didn't sleep. I went in, I have the DNC. And when they waited to tell me that I couldn't keep the baby's remains until just before. And my doctor, who I really love, my doctor, he's not a bad doctor, so I don't like want to paint him to be like a bad guy. But a lot of times terminology is just very difficult in that time frame. And so he had said, you can't keep the remains because they are hazardous material and they need to be disposed of accordingly, was the words that he had chosen. And that was incredibly difficult to hear. I really lost my mind in that moment. I was screaming. I was swearing. I literally said, and I apologize. I said, so you're going to put my baby in a fucking dumpster?
And you know, this is actually a really good spot to break in and bring Sandy into the picture. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, thanks for having me, guys. And Lindsay, what a lived experience account. And I think it's sort of informed your interest in this area, and you're such a wealth of knowledge. And it's, yeah, I think helpful, but I think sad to hear your story as well.
Oh, thank you.
So, Sandy, what I wanted to get your opinion on, and Vera, you too, since you are in the health field, do you think it's pretty common for physicians and nurses and all the staff on hand to really kind of not intentionally be insensitive, but maybe not have enough training to handle this sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. It's not unheard of for doctors to just withhold information because they really do think that they're providing you with a service. And not letting you have all the facts and not letting you make an informed decision is really very unfair to the patient. But and being a male doctor, no matter how good you are, this might not be an area that you have any experience in, you know?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I love that you've turned this positive and to this negative into such a positive, Lindsay. I mean, kudos to you for making this a better thing in your life. I mean, it'll never erase the loss, but there's so much, women's health is so new in this country, and I really can't speak to other countries, maybe Sandy can, but women's health didn't start until the 70s in this country, you know? And I went to look up miscarriage nursing plans, and there aren't any. It's just grief, you know, blanket grief. Loss over a house is equated with loss of a limb, is equated with loss of a child. And I think we have a long way to go. And I, my hat is off to you, Lindsay, for moving this journey farther ahead.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I think it's one of those things where it's like when you're in a moment and you realize how broken something is and you're like, why is this way? And it just doesn't make any sense. It's like, well, you have a choice to kind of succumb and go along with it or to make the change. And I don't think that the change starts with something monumental. I think it has to start someplace really small. And the smallest place I think you can start is probably with yourself. Right. So, you know, it took some time. Like I had my first loss and I had some ideas in that moment of being, feeling like this is really messed up, that there's like no support. And I had told my OB that I was struggling. I was honest and told him, you know, I'm really having a hard time. And he told me to go to Huga Mental Health, which didn't really help me in that moment. It kind of just made me feel like I was like a mental case and it really made me feel worse about the situation. And so I was like, I don't want to feel that way, you know? And like in hindsight, I think that was probably not a great way for me to feel in that moment, maybe, but I don't know that there's really any appropriate way to feel in that moment. I think it's very individualized.
Right. You know, it's like nurse and an employee at Huga Mental Health. I hope that you can release some of that stigma and make it easier for grieving parents.
I seeked therapy eventually, but it was a long time later. I think I just in that moment was not there, you know.
It also could be the way it was framed to you.
I think that's all part of it is it's the terminology that makes it really hard to process. And the way that you deliver it is just really, really hard to process. I mean, even like when I got my chart afterwards, I was waiting for my results to come in to see if they had found a reason like infection or whatever. And when I got it, my chart, the medical terminology said spontaneous abortion. And
mine's, I've been there.
It was really hard to, and I know rationally as like a logical woman, but it's just for billing purposes. Like that's the way they have to submit it to the insurance company. So like, I understand, but it's just so hard when you're so heavy in grief, it's hard to process that. Mm-hmm. So really, and like, you know, I've had experiences myself, and I know so many women who have had experiences of going to the ER in these situations. Even if you have a healthy outcome at the end of a pregnancy, if you go to the ER and you're kind of earlier on, they kind of treat you like they don't care. They continuously just say, there's nothing we can do, you're too early.
That's exactly my experience.
Mm-hmm. And it's brutal because it's like, and even from a rational standpoint, like I understand you maybe can't save the baby because it's too early, but hi, like I'm still alive. Were you maybe going to give a crap about me, about I'm hemorrhaging out here? Like,
mm-hmm.
I sat
in an ER room alone for 6 hours, mm-hmm. bleeding out, freezing, kind of wondering what was going on. No one told me a thing. They finally took me in for an ultrasound where they didn't see anything. So I'm sitting there just like, what is going on? And it's just so surreal because you're just in this constant state of maybe, but maybe not. Mm-hmm. And when he finally got into the room, he looks me dead in the eye and goes, we don't know. You might be, you might not be. And that's it. And I just kind of stared at him for like 5 minutes. Like, I don't even know what to say to you. I'm just so caught up in my grief and my anger. Like, what do I say to you to that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what's happening. And then, you know, they dismiss you, they discharge you. And there's just, it's nothing. They're just like, next. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I think that's what really got me going was like, I know as a healthcare professional, you have to kind of remain kind of undetached, mm-hmm. but there is a difference between being detached and being insensitive and having no empathy. And this man had no empathy for what was going on.
Mm-hmm. There's also a line between being detached and being therapeutic. Mm-hmm. That he has missed.
And it's just, and I was with Lindsay and I think I came home to Lindsay that night and said, Lindsay, he said nothing to me. Where do mm-hmm. I go from here?
Yeah.
And all she could do was cry with me. And yeah. That's what we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have such a failing health system here as well, Katie. That experience is not uncommon, sadly. I've seen it working in ED in a social work role. I've seen medical doctors just seem to be, it's like an unknown for them. It's like women's reproductive health is so unknown, and they find it really challenging to have a kind of a treatment, or they just think, what do I do here? How do I deal with this? And I mean, I think Lindsay pointed out, hey, I'm still a human here and I'm in pain. I'm experiencing things right now. Comfort me, help me, you know, apply the medical model to me. Like, I mean, that is so simple to do, but they seem to just, I've seen it so many times. They're like deers in the headlights, and it particularly, sadly, male doctors, you know, so yeah, it's not a nice experience. And I think from that, I think what we've learned as well is the importance of having people around us who've had lived experience, the women, you know, who we can go to for support, who are able to say, hey, I've been through this. This is kind of, you know, the normal feelings to have. And this is what our bodies go through. This is the hormone experience. You know, like we totally need those other women. So, yeah, I can hear how much parallel there is between Australia and the US with this. So, which is, yeah, disappointing. It is disappointing. I think we need to do more. I think we need to ask more of our health systems.
Well, and to Lindsay's point too, when they were talking about, you know, what do you do after and talking about being in a bad place, we need to figure out what we can do for these women as a whole. And my experience was awful. My experience was absolutely life-changing, and I have a hefty PTSD diagnosis to deal with that as well. There are a lot of things that come from that. This isn't like a bag you thought you were going to buy. This is not just losing your child. It's also losing everything you hoped that child would turn into. And there's a huge grief process that comes out of that. And my ex-husband and I, our therapist told us that 50% of marriages do not survive after the loss of a child. It's just too much. And they don't have anything for us out there. There's nothing for what happens next. You have this very clinical treatment of these women just based on the physiology of it, but they have nothing for your heart or for your head that happens afterwards. And it took me a really long time to find a therapist that would even listen to all of these symptoms I was having after this happened and gave me a diagnosis for it. And we tried EMDR therapies and a bunch of other stuff, but what happens? I mean, when you leave the hospital without your child, there's nothing else in the world like that. And we don't have anything for these women afterwards other than, I don't know what to tell you, try again later. The worst part of it, and in any kind of loss situation, but especially with early on, is they don't even acknowledge that it's a baby.
No,
they don't.
They really push you to just try again. It's medical professionals that I had a lot of, even like friends and family, you know, that when I even told them, I found out today the baby's heart isn't beating anymore. Their immediate response was, well, are they sure? And I was like, yeah, they're sure. And then the next thing was, well, you can just try again. And, you know, I'd like to tell people, you don't ever say anything that starts with at least. At least you can get pregnant. At least it was early. At least you can try again. At least you have other kids. At least you're young. You know, like any of those things are just so dismissive and disheartening. And I had stuff like that said to me by the medical field and my friends and my family.
I was 100% guilty of that. And I'm so glad you educated me. And this is before my loss. And as soon as it happened to me, I was like, oh my God, this is what she meant. Mm-hmm.
This is universal. I'm sure I've said those same things to people because you don't know unless it's you. And this is part of why there's, you know, it's such a stigma. And I think if we talk about it more and we're more open about it and more people know, then they'll realize that like Ash was saying, you know, it's more than just a baby. You have like the primary loss of the baby, but there's all these secondary losses. You lost not just that baby, you lost the first birthday, you lost the second birthday and the third in kindergarten and graduation in college and grandchildren. It's an entire life that you envisioned that's gone. All of it. There's a million pieces gone. And so it's not, you don't just get over it. You know, and other things that people would say to me was, you know, this kind of same along the same lines, you should try again. You should try to be happy that you're okay. And, that you have other kids or whatever the case is. And other big ones were a lot of like projecting their faith, you know, a lot of like, it's God's plan, it's God's will. Everything happens for a reason is a big one. And that's, it's okay for people to feel that way, but that's not always what people want to hear in that moment. You know, mm-hmm. I think what people can say, you know, things that are actually helpful is to just listen, really, to just listen and listen and listen and validate somebody's feelings. And to tell them it's okay to feel that way. Right. It's okay to hate the world. It's okay to question God. It's okay to question what the fuck kind of God lets your baby die. Like it's, that's completely okay to do. And probably appropriate, because there's no part of losing a baby. Losing a baby is so backwards from what we're programmed. Like we're supposed to outgrow our children and die way before them. So you, when it happens to you, it's just so unnatural. Losing a baby is so unnatural. And it just wreaks havoc in your life, you know?
I'm curious. I'm so sorry. I'm curious for you ladies. After you experienced your loss situation, did you feel almost a disconnect now when a friend or a loved one will announce a pregnancy, right?
I no longer
see like, oh my God, there's going to be a new baby. I think of it as she might have a new baby. Do you guys experience that same thing that you just associate pregnancy baby?
It's so funny you say that because Lindsay and I had this talk. We have this talk often, just, you know, taking it day by day, week by week, you know, doctor appointment by doctor appointment. And it's funny, you say that because I remember thinking to myself after like they confirmed it's a loss, your HCG is dropping. I remember a few days later just thinking, I got to get it together. Mm-hmm. And a friend announced they were pregnant. And I remember being just so angry about
it.
So angry about it. Like, this isn't fair at all. And I remember taking the weekend to be angry and scream and cry and try to move on. And then a week later, I think it was about, I started bleeding again. And I just thought, this can't be happening again. This can't. It's too soon. You know, call the doctor the next day. You know, I'm bleeding. Can we check things out? And they wanted me to get some blood work. So I'm going in. I'm probably talking to Lindsay, honestly, while I'm getting my blood work done. And I just have these intense, intense pains. Like stop it. Stop you in your track kind of pain. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just a shock. And I'm looking at the nurse as she's taking my blood. I'm like, this really hurts. So they sent me right over to my doctor's office where they confirmed almost immediately that I was an ectopic pregnancy.
Oh, geez. And
here's the thing about ectopic pregnancies, y'all. They're rare. Mm-hmm. And you learn about them in health class, but you learn about them like real quick, like because they're like 1-2% of pregnancies. They just don't happen that often. Mm-hmm. And what they also don't tell you is that an undetected ectopic pregnancy can kill you.
Mm-hmm.
If it ruptures, you will bleed out. And if they don't catch it and you bleed completely out, that's it. And women have died from this. Women do die from this. The majority of the women dying from this are Black women because a whole different topic about that is doctors.
A whole different topic on that one.
I mean, women, doctors don't listen to women with pain in general, but they really don't listen to Black women.
That is actually the source of my, that's the source of my loss. I went in, I'm not sure how familiar you ladies are, but.
So after they confirmed it, you have to go with a treatment plan. Now I did not rupture. I was so fortunate that they caught it in time. So the treatment for that is methotrexate. And if you're unfamiliar with methotrexate, it is a type of drug that they use to shrink tumors sometimes. Yeah. And they use it for RA. It shrinks things. It's supposed to basically, and the way I looked at it was, this is going to finish off killing my baby. And I felt guilty about it. I felt like it should have been me. It wasn't fair.
a really normal response, though, isn't it? I mean, a lot of women say that when they're experiencing loss through either a missed miscarriage, you know, or a miscarriage, I think what happens is we kind of feel as if though, as Lindsay said, it's so unnatural, and we go through it and we think this shouldn't happen to my baby, you know, like I'm older and this is probably more natural for me. It just seems so unnatural. And it's mm-hmm. such a difficult experience. And I think it makes sense as well, Katie, that during that time when you had someone announce their pregnancy, that you did feel a bit angry and resentful. I mean, you were going through loss and it was painful for you physically, emotionally. And it sounds like it was a really difficult time. And as unfortunate as it was, I guess there are times as well where I guess you would look medically that it was an ectopic pregnancy and how scary that would have been if it did rupture, and that you're still here with us. What a awful thing for you to go through. But I'm so thankful that you had Lindsay through this, someone to actually be able to talk to, someone who can speak through this experience from a lived experience approach. So
there was absolutely no way to get through this without Lindsay. 100%. Yeah. She offered to go to doctor's appointments with me. She offered to scream with me. She offered to do everything with me. And really, everyone needs a Lindsay to go through stuff like this. And my husband was super supportive too. And I know, and he's in the other room and he's going to hear me say this. And I'm so sorry, Kyle. But I think at one point when like you tell him it's an ectopic and he's just, thank God you're alive. And I'm just thinking,
yeah.
What about the baby? You know?
I know, there's so much guilt, but then you're like, I'm here too. And did you have a child at this stage already, Katie?
Yes, I had Grayson. Grayson was, he had just turned four, I think, three or four. And
yeah,
he's watching his mother fall apart and he thinks it's his fault that I'm so upset and he doesn't know what to do. And that's hard with kids too, because they see their parents so upset.
Yeah.
And they want to comfort you, and you're just like, I'm supposed to be, you know, and this is comforting you.
It affects the whole family unit, you know, and support for partners, for children, for other, you know, members of family, friends that are impacted, and it has that ripple effect. And there is quite limited support, I can speak for Australia anyway, you know, for those people outside of that. I mean, it's estimated that we have over 450,000 parents every year affected by pregnancy loss here. And we only have three main services that deal with that. So, you know, I mean, out of a population of a bit over 20 million. So, you know, that's quite significant. And, you know, people around us do get affected as well. And for them to help us, they need support too. So, you know, it just makes sense that we have those services available. And support services, like I think what Lindsay has. Lindsay, you have a group or a support group that maybe you might have spoken about it as you entered the show and I wasn't here, but maybe you could actually let us know a little bit about that if that's okay.
Oh, yeah, of course. So after my first loss, I had a second loss 5 months later with very similar circumstances. And it was kind of at that point that I was like, there really needs to be resources for this. I think it was kind of my way of like also healing, you know, like I guess trying to find meaning in what, you know, had happened. So I started a group called Ray of Hope for bereaved parents, and it's really for everybody. You know, I kind of started it as like a pregnancy infant loss support group, but I have a member that comes in who has infertility, and we welcome her with open arms, because it's still, infertility is a form of grief and loss too. You know, there's so many different so many different types of loss with pregnancy. It's just so complicated. So we really, you know, she had contacted us and explained her situation. And so we welcome her with open arms. Everybody in the group is so, so good about, you know, we have people on the earlier end, like myself, to later losses, stillbirth. And everybody is so good about being respectful and understanding. that we all grieve different units. You know, for me, I never got to hold my baby. So I in some ways grieve that I never got that. I don't want to say closure because I don't think there's ever closure, but I just didn't get that sense of like healing, I guess. You know, where other people whose losses were later, it was, you know, they had this nursery ready and never got to bring a baby home, you know? So it's a different, very different perspective, but everybody's so, so supportive and of each other and so understanding and great. And another big problem I find, at least here in the US, is that there are also no support resources for men. If you think women have little support resources for pregnancy loss, I mean, for men, there's just, it just does not exist whatsoever. And men grieve too, you know, and that's a whole another issue is how our society kind of puts men in this point of they're supposed to be strong and supportive. And, you know, you're watching your partner fall apart and feel so responsible. And how do you support somebody when you're grieving too? And, you know, and you grieve differently. You know, my husband and I grieve very differently. You know, he wanted to kind of move on and move forward and try again. And I was just beside myself. I was stuck. I was terrified. I was blaming myself. You know, and even as women, we grieve different. You know, I mean, for myself, after our second loss, I decided I was going to have a memorial service and I didn't really give a shit what anybody thought about it. It was something I had to do for me to kind of like acknowledge the lives that were. And I think everybody thought I was a little crazy and I didn't really tell a lot of people that I was doing it. And it was very private. It was just us, our kids, our parents and our siblings. My husband's grandmother came, but you know, I mean, it was very small. But it was something I had to do. You know, I named my losses, and that's not something that everybody does early on. But I think for some people it helps. Some people get a tattoo; they plant a flower or a tree, or I mean, it's really individualized. And it's whatever's going to help you feel better in that moment because it's just so heavy, you know. So it's kind of all those ideas that it group that we discuss of like just trying to get you through the next 5 minutes because it's so heavy. And as time goes on, I don't want to say it gets easier. It just gets different. It changes shape. It's a process and it's always there. You're always grieving. You know, you don't ever really get over it. It's like when it first happens, it's really heavy and it consumes your whole entire life. And then you kind of start to build your life around it, you know?
It's sort of process trauma, isn't it, Lindsay? That trauma process of when we move through stages of trauma and grief and loss, and we adapt and cope as we go. But it sort of doesn't ever really go away, per se. Yeah, absolutely.
And the triggers are always there. I mean, it's not... I like to tell people grief isn't linear. I think when people picture grief, they always picture those like, you know, the 5 stages of grief. Yeah. You're in shock and you're angry and then you're upset and, you know, and it's not like that. I mean, it's kind of more like it's all over the place. You're kind of
like
doing okay. And then you're like, not okay. And then you're over here and you're, you know, you're kind of all over the place. Yeah, I love that. I love that graphic. I love that one. And then I like the other one that I had sent in you don't get over. Yeah, that one too. So that's kind of what I was talking about with kind of grieving. It's so heavy in the beginning. And then you kind of come to this place of this is not going to go away. And you of acceptance of this is who I am. And I'm always going to be this person. And you do kind of grieve your former self at that, the place of innocence that you used to have, you know, because even when if you do decide to try again, you never walk back into an OB's office and feel real great about your pregnancy anymore. You know, you're surrounded by all these beautiful, glowing, happy women, and that image is gone.
It's
for you.
So funny you say that.
Never that person again.
Say, let's move on into after. You know,
yes.
You know, you're in therapy, you're mm-hmm. talking about it, you're coping, and suddenly you find yourself pregnant again. Mm-hmm. And it's such a bag of emotions, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
What now? Like, can I be happy? Can I be excited? Mm-hmm. Like, is this going to happen, or am I going to? And like the image says, like, some of the symptoms that you're feeling for pregnancy, these are some of the things you feel before a miscarriage.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's the hard part with it all, is that you never really feel great about it. Pregnancy after loss is so different than pregnancy without loss. You know, I mean, that's me laying on the floor with a Doppler. My husband is amazing, and he totally supported. Well, I always joke and say he supported my crazy, because he was very supportive, and he bought me a home Doppler because I could not wait 4 weeks in between appointments. I like had to know that there was a heartbeat all the time, because it's so hard to trust your body when you feel like your body failed you and the anxiety is so real. My pregnancy with my, you know, what everybody deems like your rainbow baby, your pregnancy after loss, was very traumatic, which is that's a whole nother topic. But,
I don't mean to laugh. It's just kind of an awkward laugh, because I'm like, Lindsay, I'm sorry. It was a shit show.
It was definitely a shit show.
I'm so glad that, you know, the best result happened, but man,
yeah.
That was.
So Katie's referencing, so I'll brush on it quickly. I was hospitalized with my son for 80 days, 80 consecutive days. I was there 3 months. And I was hemorrhaging out. I was hemorrhaging every day, all day long. And some days were worse than others. Some days, you know, they would bring the stretcher in and they were going to zip me to the OR, and I would plead to not take him because I knew he might not survive. I was 23 weeks when I got admitted, and I had to sign all these papers saying that I even wanted them to try to save him. And, you know, they basically prepped us for the worst, that he probably wouldn't make it. So that was really hard too. But that's a different subject. That would be trauma birth subject, which is not tonight's show. But no, I mean, it is really hard. I scheduled a lot of ultrasounds that I paid for privately. I want a gender reveal. Yeah, that's what I already knew I was having a boy. I'll book that one just so I can make sure he's still on there, because your OB doesn't always accommodate and let you come in. In that anxiety after loss is so real. And I really wish the healthcare system would, you know, kind of, and I understand in the US for insurance purposes, they can't always do that. You know, you have to, your insurance only covers so much stuff, but you really do. It should be psychologically, they should be able to psychologically write it off or something, because you really do need those ultrasounds for reassurance in that time frame. At least for me, maybe not everybody feels that way, but for me, it was really, really, really hard. And every time I went to the bathroom, I was looking for blood. And and if I'm being honest, and maybe that's in part also because of my son's pregnancy, I am almost 2 years from the time that I had my son, and I still check for blood every time I go to the bathroom. And I'm not even pregnant. And every single time I go to the bathroom, I check for blood. And it's that PTSD thing in your brain, you know? And it is really, really hard to deprogram your brain from doing that when you've been doing it for so long. You know, it's just the unfortunate reality. And so any woman who is pregnant after loss, I would tell you, be really kind to yourself. Be really kind, be really, really patient with yourself. And if you need an extra appointment, make the extra appointment. It's okay to need the extra appointment. It's okay to tell your OB, I need an extra appointment. I can't go 4 weeks. Most of them will be relatively accommodating to at least let you come in and just do a heartbeat check, you know? I mean, as a doula, I wouldn't necessarily like advise you go get a Doppler like I did. Because for some people, it makes the anxiety worse because you're not a trained professional. So, you know, you're not really maybe equipped to find that heartbeat. So you might not be able to find it and everything is okay. So it could make your anxiety worse, you know? So I think it's probably always best to leave it to a professional. I probably should take my own advice on that regard. But
it reminds me, Lindsay, of when I got addicted to checking my blood pressure with a blood pressure machine. And you just, and it goes up every time and you're like, oh no. I shouldn't be doing this, but I've just got to scratch this itch, you know?
Exactly. And so maybe leave the Dopplers and the ultrasounds up to the professionals, but yeah. I think it's okay to need those things and to discuss them openly and to be honest, really honest with your healthcare team to tell them, this is what I need. And if your doctor won't accommodate, it's okay to find one who will. That's okay too. It's okay to find a different one, you know? To see if somebody else will, you know, I think all that's, and it's like, it's very normal. Unfortunately, everybody thinks a rainbow pregnancy is like all joyous and like, you know,
there's nothing. I mean,
that baby is the happy ending.
That is such a simple way to put it. With my pregnancy, his name is Arlo. So with Arlo, I was so anxious. I couldn't even enjoy the first, second trimester. I was having vivid nightmares about my baby and his name being in there. So I'm having these dreams of this doctor telling me Arlo's dead. Arlo doesn't have a heartbeat. You know, there's no more Arlo. And I'm going into my midwife crying like, I can't sleep. I can't eat. This is so bad. I'm going to lose my baby. And I was so lucky. The second I would go in with these extra appointments, and you again encouraged me to call, and the first thing they do was put the Doppler and just let me hear the heartbeat, and I could just feel myself just calm down a little bit. And I mean, I tried everything.
Yeah,
I tried therapy. I tried herbal teas that were approved by the midwife. I tried acupuncture, which was really kind of interesting because, you know, with acupuncture, they're hitting these pressure points that are supposed to help you just kind of relieve this tension and kind of open up. But I'm so stuck in my thoughts, I can't relax. So I'm sitting here with needles in my body, just so tense, like, can this be over with? And really, it was talking. It was in therapy. It was talking. It was talking to Lindsay. It was talking to a social worker. It was talking to my husband. It was talking to a support group that just kind of got me to think, okay, I can keep going. I can do this.
Yeah.
I can make it. And finally, in my third trimester, I felt comfortable enough to actually enjoy my pregnancy. And that is my rainbow maternity shoe afterwards.
And that's so beautiful. And I have to be honest, Katie, when those pictures came out, I was so jealous. I never got to do those with Vanson. I never, because we were hospitalized, but they are just stunning. You're so, it's such a beautiful,
and I think that was photo too. I think that was so important for my journey to be able to finally just celebrate him, because he's something to celebrate. He really is. Yeah. And Lindsay like nailed it when she said, you know, you walk into that OB's office, it's never the same. Like I think it was my first appointment dealing with my anxiety. I first time parents, they're so excited. This is like, they're finding out the gender today, and I'm just thinking, you're just getting your hopes up. you have no idea what you might face. You have no idea. I hope you stay in that bubble forever, because coming out of that bubble is never, you can't go back.
That loss of innocence that Lindsay spoke about earlier, that innocent self that hasn't gone through all of these things and has to be worried about those outcomes. So there's a lot of wisdom there.
And then just to top off my anxiety, and I can only laugh about this now. And part of me dealing with this was having just a really dark humor. And I'm not going to be dark on here, but man, I had to laugh at some of the stuff that happened to me, because what else are you going to do? I went over with Arlo. I was a week late. So I spent my whole first, the first 20 weeks of my pregnancy scared to death that I'm going to lose this. He would not come out. He would not come out. So I spent all that time worrying that, you know, I got to keep him in. I got to keep him in. He's, you know, I can't do this. Kid wouldn't come out.
That was my pregnancy with Viv, because they had given me a 50% chance of losing her, and I prayed and prayed and prayed for her to stay in, and then I had to get induced.
Yep, had to get induced.
And I was like, it was all that praying. I really prayed that baby.
Seriously, like you think of, like, you're just talking to anyone who's holistic, please just don't let me lose this baby, and then the baby stays too long. And then you feel guilty, like, get out. Stop this. Yes.
And I don't know. I mean, how is it for you, Katie? Do you find that your parenting, even with Arlo, is different than it was with Grayson? Oh,
absolutely. And actually, I have to give a lot of credit to my husband, again, who has always been such a supportive partner. And I go back to what Ashley said about 50% of marriages don't make it. And I'm just so thankful that Kyle and I have just always been just on each other's team. Our biggest fans. Like we have each other's back through everything. And after being through this experience, I think we can get through anything. And with Arlo, I wouldn't put him down. I had this thing, like, if I put him down, that's it. And I think Kyle noticed before I did, like, maybe you need to go talk to someone. Like, you're looking a little anxious there. And there was a lot of pressure with, and this is a whole other topic, like breastfeeding and pumping and not sleeping. And my trigger, there's a lot of triggers, but my trigger is no sleeping. Mm-hmm. When I don't get sleep, I get my anxiety is just 100% like revved up. That's it. So with a newborn, you're not sleeping.
Oh, you're
not. So I was just at an all time high. I just couldn't do it. And I'm glad. And that's another thing, postpartum care. It's not.
Oh yeah.
It's so below where it needs to be. Like, they screen you really quickly at your 6-week appointment. Like, are you feeling sad? Are you sure? Have you ever felt sad? Is it the baby blues? Are you sure you really aren't functioning? Or well, like,
like 1950s, isn't it? It's just,
when you're just like, I can't handle this. I'm having these terrible thoughts about myself. I'm not sleeping. I'm not eating. They're like, it's just the baby blues. You'll be okay.
Yeah. And sometimes you're not okay. The postpartum blues are very underrated. You need to feel free to seek the help, whatever help you need, whatever, you know, support you need. Oh, it has absolutely. To be.
If you are not feeling yourself, if you know yourself better than anyone, you know when you're not feeling right, you know that this is, like, there's something wrong. You speak up. Don't be afraid. And
you know when you're anxious. You know that your body is telling you something's not right. You know.
And like Lindsay said, you gotta advocate for yourself. Like, even if they're trying to brush you off, if you know it's not right, you just gotta speak up. Like, this is not right. You need to listen to me.
And this is part of what is so profound to me, is that we have all these appointments for women when they're pregnant. You know, you go every 4 weeks, if not more. And then you have one postpartum appointment, even for a full-term pregnancy. When you lose a baby, you don't even get that. They have you come in and they go, okay, your HCG is 0 and you can try again. Mm-hmm. They don't even give you a postpartum appointment.
That is the worst part of it.
Screening for at a postpartum appointment, you're typically screening for postpartum depression. So you mean to tell me that these women whose hormones are all over the place from losing a baby, who are grieving a baby, who have no support because some of them are before 12 weeks, and we are conditioned in society, don't tell anybody that you're pregnant before 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Because no one wants to talk about it.
You have a miscarriage, then you have to tell people about it.
And who wants to hear about it?
So you're isolating these women, and you're not giving them any support, and you're not giving them any care. And what do you think is going to happen? I mean,
it's lacking.
It's horrific. It really is awful. And it just sets you up for such a long healing process. So long healing process. I mean, like I said, I'm almost 2 years out, and my parenting after loss is so much different. You know, every day of my life, I think I'm going to have to give at least one of my kids back. And it's normally my son, you know, which is my rainbow baby, if you will. I always am waiting. And now to parent after loss during a pandemic. Oh my. Oh my, a pandemic. If we haven't been through enough, we'll just throw this right in too. Why not? You know, damn Corona coaster.
My anxiety was so peak at the beginning of lockdown. I just felt myself being triggered again. And I just had really intrusive thoughts like, man, this would have been so much easier without Arlo. And I catch myself like, trying to put that out so quickly because, you know, if I put that out in the universe, something's going to happen to
him. Like, come and scoop him up then.
Yep. I just tried so hard to push it out of my mind because if I think it's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are. He's 8 months old and he's crawling and he's babbling and he's just such a happy baby. And I can't help but sometimes feel like I don't deserve him and that I was just, it. And like you said, you just feel like that loss is just your fault. And sometimes I just feel like I don't deserve the happiness that I have with him, but he deserves to live. His life matters, that the baby I lost, that life mattered. It's just wild to me that we as women, we as parents, we, you know, men too, that we have to just suffer so silently. And it just tears me up. And that's half the reason I wanted to do this. I wanted people to be able to come here, commiserate, and know that it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to still feel sad. I mean, I was 7 weeks long, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I still feel the grief from it. I still feel the anxiety from it. Part of the reason I personally am choosing not to have more children is because I don't think I could handle it again. I think my pregnancy with Arlo was so taxing, like emotionally and physically. I don't think I could do it again. And sure. I know, Sandy, you said you had some experience supporting women and parents going through this. And I just kind of, as we wrap up, kind of you to just kind of tell us.
Of course, Katie. Yeah. So in Australia, so I've just heard about your postpartum care pathways, and they sound, as I said, alarmingly lacking. So we're not that much better, but a little bit, I think, after just hearing what you've said. So I have worked briefly in maternity, in the maternity ward, and we have a Memorial Day every year for, this is our social work team who organised this, of course, and we have a Memorial Day every year for pregnancy loss and for women, their partners and families who want to join, and we go to a local spot, you know, and just... We don't really talk a lot about it, I guess, when we're there. People talk amongst each other. It's not really formal, but it's a day that we can acknowledge and recognise those experiences, the loss itself, and also develop support networks more and more and more. And I think that that's been really successful here where I'm from in regional Queensland in Australia. But we also have a, like, pathway that we follow postpartum. So... for many, many reasons, not just to whether it's been pregnancy loss or not, there is a postpartum pathway here. So we have midwives who are trained in attachment work. So they'll work obviously not with women who have had pregnancy loss, but they've also are trained in pregnancy loss. And to make sure that there's appropriate referral pathways for, you know, grief, trauma, specialized care, to make sure that these are people that they go to, professionals who understand pregnancy loss. And we follow them for 3 months after. You know, that's the minimum of care. We have always, like, I've had families that I've followed up for longer than that. They've needed that little bit longer. It's not supported by our health system, that extra time. But we try very much to do that where we can. So you know, and it's so needed. I found 6 to 12 months, a lot of them felt that that was the kind of time frame that it took to do that thing where they sort of build their life around that wonderful illustration that you shared, Lindsay, of moving on with trauma like that and pregnancy loss trauma, is to kind of build your life around it. They felt 6 to 12 months, I found anyway. So, yeah, I really think that you do need that support afterwards. And I really couldn't advocate more for doulas and for the support of women. Totally have enjoyed listening to you, Lindsay. I think I've said in our chat how wonderful you are and what an advocate you are for women who have experienced pregnancy loss. So thank you so much to you for sharing all of your experience, and Katie for being so brave, and Ash as well for sharing experience of loss, and so other women can learn, and that we can break this stigma and we can start talking about it and we can feel what we need to, both physically and emotionally. So yeah, thank you so much. It's been such a privilege to be a part of the show today.
We need to be the change we want. Absolutely. We need to live that change. Yeah. And I appreciate your advocacy, you. Lindsay. It's wonderful to see. And very inspirational.
So I think that just about wraps us up for tonight, Lindsay. Again, thank you. Thank you for this, but I don't think I'll ever be able to thank you enough for everything you do for me, for mothers, for parents, for your family.
My mother. It's honestly, it sounds maybe different to other people, but it's really honestly like an honor to be able to be there for somebody when everything's so raw. And like people come to group and share pictures of their babies, and there's not a lot of people who even ever got to meet or see that baby. So I feel really honored to be a part of people's journeys. I really do.
James, can we throw the Facebook group up one more time?
Yes, we can.
And this is Lindsay's blog, and Lindsay, you always have such great entries. I mean, some of them are more lighthearted than others, but that's life. I mean, that is living life after loss. Some days are better than others. And I really encourage people to just reach out to someone, a doctor, a friend, a spouse. Don't be afraid to talk about this. I mean, I worked myself up so much to talk about this tonight, and I'm so glad I did. And I'm so glad to have these people rally around me to support me in talking about my journey. And I really hope there are people out there who will rally around you. And you, as always, you can reach out to us on Facebook, and I'm on Instagram. I'm always willing to talk to someone who has been through a similar experience, or just someone who wants to talk in general. Like, let's shoot the shit. It'll be fine. You know? And whatever's going to get you through the next day, we're here for you. We are. And thank you guys again for watching. And
I learned a lot tonight, and I want to say thank you to Lindsay and Katie. I want to give you the biggest hug on the planet right now.
Damn Corona coaster.
Thanks to Ash. Thanks to Ash for being here for her.
Thank you to Ashley.
Thank you, Ashley. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Vera, for your medical point of view and point of view as women. That's so important, too. And, you know, back to the regular programming on Tuesday, guys, okay? And don't forget to watch out for our special airing of our interview with Lisa Wilcox. So
I don't think we know when that's airing yet, but we'll definitely let you guys know.
Oh, keep an eye out for it. Do you have the trailer for that, like, right on hand or no?
How long has it been since you've been on Elm Street?
Don't let them put you to sleep.
Uncensored Radio's nightmare. Lisa Wilcox, coming up on Uncensored Radio.
Welcome to Wonderland, Alice.
And for good measure, we need this one too.
Just to let it fade a little bit. Oh, Lindsay, we always end the show on this. Jeff, wherever you are, I love you so much. Thank you for giving me the platform to be able to do this. All right, kids. Good night.
Bye. Good night. See ya.